This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis.
Hi there. This is episode number... What episode is this? 54. I can never remember what episode it is. It's like it's... You would think doing this every week, you would just get in some kind of rhythm and remember one after the other, but hasn't happened yet. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, this is episode number 54 with TJ David. TJ and I got the chance to talk while I was out in Aspen for the Free Skier test, Free Skier magazine test. And yeah, we just chatted up at the house, talked about what he does, which is skiing, running, and just being an overall mountain athlete. We talked about some of the brands he works with. Obviously, we talked about social media because I can't stop harping on that. We talk about all kinds of stuff, man. He's a great dude. I'm glad we got the chance to sit down. It's always better when you get the opportunity to meet some of these people in person, and just get the chat. Like you just get a better feel for it overall. Shout out to Mark Warner for that, man. Like he's from Low Pressure Podcast. He's the one that like put it in my head early on that like, doing them in person is the way to do it. And like, I mean, we will do some every once in a while where we're not like, it's just a Skype one or whatever, as long as the quality comes out good and the conversation went well. I know a few of them in the beginning were like that, but I mean, it's been great, to actually meet these people. And I think if nothing else, that's been the best part of it. Like even if the conversation comes out the same, I'd gladly go wherever. But yeah, anyway, the conversation with TJ was awesome. I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy it. He's an awesome dude. We talk about how drinking is kind of like a standard thing in the ski industry, and how we both feel about that. We talk about running, which I have basically never done in my entire life. And we talk about, I mean, we talk about all kinds of stuff. I mean, you guys are going to listen to the episode anyway, right? So why do I need to tell you right now? Before we get into the episode, it sounds like we actually share a mutual sponsor, in Sawatch Hemp, that is Sawatch. You can find those guys online, at sawatch.co. These guys make super, super high quality CBD products. And I'm psyched to be working with them. Obviously, it seems like podcasts and CBD are all the rage right now, so it makes sense that we're working those angles together. But yeah, I mean, there's a full range of different products on their website. You can start at the lower level with the 300 milligram vapor distilled tincture bottle. If that's how you say, I don't know if I've ever said that word out loud before. They also have salves. I mean, they have everything, and the stuff is super high quality. All the information you need is on their website. They even have coffee, which is crazy. But yeah, check their website out. Again, just sawatch.co, and you can save 15% off on your purchase using promo code OUTOFBOUNDS, all underscore, and save 15% off on your purchase. So thank you to those guys. I'm super happy to have them on board. You'll be hearing more about them as we go through. And crank out some of these other episodes in the spring. But yeah, without further ado, here's our episode with TJ. Thanks.
Cool. So who are you? What do you do? Tell the people a little bit of background about yourself.
Sure. So, my name's TJ David. I live, here in Aspen, Colorado, and have for 8 years now. Primarily a professional skier, also kind of diving into other mountain sports right now. So I'd consider myself more of a mountain athlete than just a skier. I focus on specific areas like endurance sports and combining like an endurance aspect to skiing and big mountain skiing. And then in the summer, I also correlate that with trail running and kind of mountain running. Nice. Specifically, I compete in the US Sky Ultra Series, which is a series of sky running races. It's part of more of an international federation of sky running events. It's growing in popularity here, and I think the trail racing is too, and it kind of ties into an overall program that I have as an athlete.
Trail racing in general seems like it's growing in popularity, and I don't really, I guess I get it because it's a little better than running on the road. It's more fun than running on the road, and it's a little less on your joints and shit, and it's more scenic. So I guess that's probably part of it. But running's never been a thing that I can even remotely relate to. Like it's a thing that I have no interest in doing at all. But that being said, how'd you get into running?
The primary driver behind getting into running was becoming fitter for bigger days in the mountains.
Okay.
I think that, you know, some people just aren't into running, and I think that's like totally reasonable and understandable. I get it. You know, the cool thing about running is it does correlate to increased capacity in fitness areas, aerobic fitness, and longevity, and your ability to stay in the mountains longer, more efficiently. It really works well as a training tool towards, bigger goals, bigger adventures that you might have that would otherwise really push you physically. Mm. So in order to, do those things with more confidence, you can create a base of fitness through running, especially in the summer. That's how I got into this. I wanted to be fitter when I moved from Utah to Aspen 8 years ago, and I realized that the approaches to get out into the mountains here are they're much longer. Mm. The amount of terrain that you have to cover to get anywhere, it takes a lot longer, and you need to be fitter.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over in Utah, where I used to live, my longest tour was like a 3-hour deal. And so, my focus on the skiing aspect of things has changed as my endurance levels have increased, and it's opened up interesting avenues for me as an athlete. And it's kind of made my experience more dynamic, I would say. And the cool thing about that is that now I look at the playground we have here in Aspen specifically. We have some of the most captivating and iconic peaks in Colorado. Mm. And those are all accessible to me as long as weather and conditions are in line. But they are all very accessible to me now. Rather, 8 years ago, they were not. They were just out of my realm, not in terms of my skiing ability or my abilities as a mountain athlete or a mountaineer, but definitely out of my realm in terms of, using fitness and the necessity to use fitness to get out there and access those places.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's one of those things where, like, as you get better at it, you like it more. You want to do it a little more. I'm assuming so, if you want to compete in it and actually
absolutely,
make it a thing that you do. Do you ride bikes too, or do you just run?
I just run. I haven't gotten into the biking thing because I can't quite wrap my mind around.
Seems like it's a big thing in Aspen, especially.
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. And I have a lot of friends who love it.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's definitely something you should get into. But, I mean, not that I know anything about you to, like, recommend shit for you. But, like, it's definitely a different thing, and it's a different kind of fitness, I guess, especially mountain biking. Like, road biking is fucking kind of dumb, but mountain biking is like full body fitness, so I think it tends to all wrap together pretty well. So you said you're from Utah originally?
Not originally from Utah. I'm from the East Coast.
Okay,
whereabouts? I grew up in New Jersey.
Sick.
I spent time in Connecticut, New York, and then when I finished school, I spent 2 seasons living in Utah and a little time in Denver during that period, and then ended up landing in Aspen kind of on a whim, and I love it here.
It's beautiful.
For the most part, I think this place facilitates access to a number of really great outlets. We've touched on a few: skiing, ski mountaineering, running, and the mountain biking is obviously really big here as well. So if you're into those things, Aspen is totally for you.
Yeah. It's expensive though, huh?
Yes.
So, like, how do you balance that?
It's difficult to live here.
I can't imagine.
People ask me that quite all the time. And part of being a person, a human, is that has passions and wants to pursue those passions is hustling pretty hard to make those things happen. I work, this season I'm working four nights a week and sometimes five at a restaurant just to cover my overhead, essentially.
Yeah.
And I derive about one third of my income from being an athlete. And I also, I coach other athletes too.
Awesome.
As a way to kind of give back. I think that skiing and trail running and some endurance sports that really are a bit centralized in terms of selfishness.
Mm.
And so I try to help facilitate through my coaching program. I guess in a roundabout or kind of an indirect way, I do try to balance out the selfish nature of kind of being a professional athlete with helping to facilitate people reaching their goals as athletes as well. I think being a guide of some sort or a coach in those respects, for me, it adds balance to my life because I don't always feel that having a specific mountaineering goal or a racing goal, that's very personal to me. And I think it's important to reach out to the broader community of people and interact with them and try to, you know, use my experience as a helping tool.
That's awesome. Yeah. How do you determine who gets coached, who doesn't get coached? Like, do you just pick people off the fucking street or what do you do? Like,
you know, it really, at first it was word of mouth deal. And I had a few, athletes and it was, you know, I felt for me that was adding a lot to my life. And it was a really great outlet for me. So I've used my social media following as an outlet to reach people more recently. Because I'm trying to expand my coaching program. And yes, at first it was just totally word of mouth.
Yeah.
And if I met someone at a race and they're interested in my how I train and what my coach teaches me, I try to pass some of that along. And through that, I've developed my own program entirely. Mm. And it's been really cool for me, actually. I really enjoy it. Over the summer, I work with a few athletes here in town who were getting into running mountain ultra events.
Cool.
So anything over marathon, and they both had really, you know, successful for them racing seasons, and I was really proud of that and proud of their effort. And it was really fun to work with those guys. So I've kind of been more motivated to reach out to my personal following and community to see, you know, who else is interested in that program. And the response has been pretty overwhelming. But I like this idea that we're all bio individuals and we all have our own outlets that we enjoy. My way of doing things doesn't necessarily work for you or for somebody else. So I try to keep the number of people I coach to a reasonable level so that I can give each athlete, you know, the necessary attention to kind of help them explore the parts of my program that like resonate with them and implement the things that they feel are best for them. And it's a very much a two-way street.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So you mentioned reaching like more people with your social media presence, like how has social media affected what you do? I mean, because it's a crazy big thing now, and obviously you have a platform by having an Instagram page or doing whatever. Like, it's almost becoming what a website was 10 years ago, you know, having an Instagram page. So how do you use that platform?
It really depends. Yeah. I have marketing commitments with the brands that support me to use my page and my followership as a tool to help build their brand awareness. And I do that to the best of my ability. And I try to make that I try to do that in an organic way. I don't try to force any specific product towards my followers. Rather, I just try to highlight the things that I use and that work for me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I more recently, now that I have a larger, more defined following, I do use that community in order to kind of promote some of my, you could call them like life philosophies or some of the things that I've brainstormed and hope will resonate with people. Because in the end, the athletic life can be so introspective and introverted. And yeah. I do want to, in some way, and I think it's easy to like cop out and say, I'm an athlete. I have 30,000 followers on Instagram and my page is about inspiring people. Mm. That's what I do as an athlete. Yeah. And I think that's a cop out. I think like that we are responsible, and have a lot more responsibility than that. As people who are fortunate to be able to follow our passions, to live out our passions on a daily basis. We have a responsibility, a social responsibility to help facilitate that for other people, to show people not just a photo that's inspiring with a cool caption, but to actually talk about the things that motivate or drive us to recognize that each person's different. And just because for me, skiing in the Maroon Bells in Aspen is like great for me in my training. For somebody else, just skiing Aspen Mountain could be their version of that. Oh, yeah. And I think it's important to recognize that, to produce content that is, that resonates with a broader audience and that doesn't turn people off because of the sheer awe that it may inspire. So for me, I think my coaching is kind of one way that I do that. I try to talk to people and people reach out to me about the importance of having outlets for passionate expression and creativity, building community, those kind of things that are very fulfilling. I think especially for, the average person, and myself included, I work 4 nights a week at a restaurant right now because I don't fully support myself as an athlete. I mean, maybe if I live somewhere else, I could do that. It's my choice to live in Aspen, and I have exuberant overhead that I have to cover. And the nature of the ski industry here in the United States is that, there isn't tons of financial support for athletes. Even if you're, I'm 10 years established as a professional skier. I've been getting paid to ski for 10 years. Yeah. That's, even now, it's still difficult to negotiate contracts and to make that a lifestyle that works for me. But, other people literally work 5 days a week. They work two jobs 5 days a week. And, their weekend is their time to get out there. So I do want to promote, and I try to promote, the importance of being outside and having those outlets for passion and expression, those things that kind of like get us through the day to day. Maybe in a job that we're not totally stoked on, or working in an environment that doesn't necessarily resonate with our core values or who we are as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like 75 things that you just said that I'd like to like go back and touch on. No, that's okay. But one of the main things is you're right. Like, I do think it's kind of a cop out to just kind of be like that, because you're kind of hacking that Instagram system now, because everybody just wants to see an influencer and them talk about like the standard shit, right? Like, they talk about, oh, this is what you do for the environment, this is what you do here, and like all that stuff is great, but it's also important to like use your platform to say the shit that you actually feel, which is cool. Like, and I think that people are starting to turn that around a little bit and do more of that, but it's also like, it's hard to balance using Instagram as a tool and using it as like part of your career, like
absolutely
it's a different thing in some ways, and that's just a we'll see what happens with it over the next few years. But I was talking to somebody else about this a while ago, and it's like, Instagram and Twitter and all these things, like, they need to be used as like a tool instead of being used as like who you are. And like, I don't know. It's kind of a frustrating thing to me because it's so new, but there's so many people who are like experts
right
already, you know?
I think that's such a loose term.
Yeah. Well, experts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Experts for anything is or a loose term.
Influencer. What are you really influencing?
You can have 10 followers and influence fucking one of them and you're now an influencer, right? Like,
yeah.
It's that whole thing. I wondered a few episodes ago what people put on their tax returns. Like, if you're an Instagram influencer, like, I don't even know what, like, what do you say? Like a marketing personality?
I would love to find out.
I would love to know.
To write some stuff
off. You should fucking do that shit. I mean, it honestly probably works great. And that's one of the things too, is like being a professional skier, everybody sees like your Instagram page and where you're skiing and doing all this stuff. And like, they assume that you get paid like a real professional athlete, nothing.
Right.
Being a ski professional athlete.
Isn't sure.
Being
a real like an NBA player.
Like an NBA player. That's what everybody thinks, I think. And it's so crazy that you can be in this industry for so long and everybody's still got a second job. Everybody in this, this is not my full-time job and it probably will never be my full-time job. And I'm assuming.
Don't self-limit yourself.
I'm not really limiting myself. It is great. But I also I know that I have too much going on all the time and I like having too much going on all the time. Yeah. So even if I could just do this, I wouldn't, you know, like it wouldn't make sense for me, but of all the pros that I've talked to, every single one of them says the same thing. It's like, you have to do something else too. Like,
right.
You have to kind of supplement it. Because there's like 10 ski athletes that are actually like making ridiculous money. And then everybody else just kind of like figures it out.
Sorry to interrupt. I think that is very, it's very interesting. I wonder, you know, what the state of the ski industry will be. Where the athlete will be in comparison to the influencer in 3 or 4 or 5 years, because I've personally dealt with issues in negotiating my own contracts as a result of having to I don't like the word compete, because I wish we would all kind of embrace more of a collective mindset and support each other in the process of being athletes and influencers and people who are passionate about skiing and the outdoors and those kinds of expressions. But, you know, quite frankly, there is a false sense of what a real athlete, I believe, is these days. Yeah. And for me, often I find myself sort of defensively negotiating contracts because brands would rather give product to somebody who has a fairly good following on Instagram, knowing that they're out there going to get photos, rather than to give financial support to an actual professional with proven 10-year track record and, you know, a massive resume to support that, because they know that they can get away with not paying somebody.
They definitely can.
And I think that's kind of an awful thing. I mean, if you're an athlete, if you're making a career out of that, I think, you know, there's marketing departments out there take advantage of athletes and they don't throw enough support around. I am very fortunate to align with some very supportive brands.
That's what I was going to ask you too, is like how... So the brands you're with, and you can detail them, how do you bring value to them? Like, how do you make yourself, because in a way you as a person are a marketing tool for this company, right?
Correct.
How do you work around that? Like, how do you make yourself valuable for them?
The way that an athlete brings value to a brand, you're kind of a multifaceted tool. You're the person who every day is out there using the product. If you're, say, skiing at Aspen, you're out there on a variety of different products and you're interacting with people on the gondola, you're talking with a multitude of different guests here. And in those instances, people do inquire about the gear, whether you're professional or not. And this happens to all sorts of people, is if you get onto the gondola with an interesting piece of equipment, maybe your skis are flashy or your jacket, someone asks you about it. Well, my role as an athlete is to be able to articulate what I'm actually using. And to do that in a way that makes sense to that person and allows them to consider possibly purchasing that product later on. And that, you know, as an athlete, that's very important. That's also ambassadorship. Mm. That's, you know, being a role model for the brand. And I think that often is overlooked because there are influencers out there. There's people who kind of get seeded a bunch of product and then don't really actually know how to articulate anything about what they're using. So, you know, that's one of the roles as an athlete. Another role of the athlete is to use that product at a high level and to provide feedback about the product so then the product can be improved upon. And you can provide tremendous value because you're using the equipment at the highest level, you know, and the potential for the gear to fail or for you to find, you know, limiting features. It's much greater for you than for the average customer.
Right.
And I do find that in my personal relationships with a number of different brands, that's a role that I play.
Yeah.
And another role is that I go to competitions.
Yeah.
You know, for the skiing, I don't compete a whole lot anymore. I focus more on the endurance side of things. I do one or two ski mountaineering races a year.
Nice.
There's a huge kind of micro community within that of really passionate people.
Like, that shit is crazy to me. Like, I like going uphill to ski downhill. To go uphill, like, at that kind of pace is, like, fucking gives me a headache thinking about it. Like, it's like, I can't. Like, it's not even a relatable thing to me.
Totally.
But the people that do it are so fucking balls deep into it.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
And there's gotta be a reason for it, right?
Like, it's cool. And there's a market for that here. Yeah. And especially in a place especially like Aspen, which is at the forefront of having progressive uphill skiing policies where there's access to skinning at a resort, at one of our four mountains, 24 hours a day. It's pretty amazing. You can't find that anywhere else that I know of. This is the most progressive place for that right now.
Yeah, so do you have to get anything to do that? You can just go uphill whenever you want. It's
completely free.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fucking sick.
Mm-hmm.
East Coast is starting to get more into it, and like there's a lot of this uphill pass shit. I heard somewhere, I don't want to shit on a mountain if it's the wrong mountain, so I won't. But I heard somewhere was charging like $40 or something like that for an uphill pass for one day.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what are we doing? Like, we're going uphill for one run. Like, $40 for one run is a lot of money. Like,
absolutely. I think that, like, it's an interesting economic driver, the fact that you can offer uphill skiing. You know, personally, I don't agree with charging for that.
Yeah,
I think that you bring people in based on the fact and the premise that you do have an uphill policy that allows someone to go to the top under their own power to ski down. And then, you know, there's kind of the assumption, and I know this kind of stuff is being tracked here in Aspen now, but you know, to see what the actual influence is on the economy. But those people generally do spend money kind of in some of the venues around town. They go to lunch, they have breakfast, right, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they're not just coming up here and like skiing in this controlled environment where the patrol has done a lot of work to open the mountain and they're using it. Most of these people actually spend money here. They visit the shops, they get their skis tuned here. They get their skis mounted here, their boots worked on. They buy stuff at full retail price. So there's a big economy. I think it's growing. And, you know, maybe big isn't the correct term, but it's a niche economy. But it's an important one. And I think, you know, for me, utilizing that as part of my program as an athlete has been pretty cool. And to go back to your original question, you know, what are the roles of an athlete? You know, the other role of an athlete is the obvious one. You know, to create captivating content on behalf of your brand so that you can reach an audience that you're essentially marketing that that equipment to, the gear, the products, at a much smaller financial investment. You know, that's the investment in myself as the athlete, in comparison to what they'd have to do to actually produce some kind of marketing campaign at a larger scale to reach those same kind of people. So, you know, my job is to go out and do a lot of photo shoots and, or to
ski act.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just part of the game.
You have to, I mean, what else are you going to do? Like it's
right. And you I think, to. Yeah, sorry to talk over you, but
no, it's okay, dude. You've been pretty good about it. Like it's fucking, I do it so much sometimes. It's hard sometimes with this because like, you need to get something out before it fucking goes away.
Yeah.
Like that's the hardest thing, I think. It's like, you gotta get it all out. But then you'd say something like that, and I'd lose, I don't know what we were even talking about. Oh, yeah. What were we talking about?
The roles of an athlete has. Cool.
All right. See, this is my point. It's a hard thing, man. I think it's important. It's also important to put a brand in a different light, you know, like depending on the type of skier that you are, like you can align yourself differently with different brands. And then the perception of that brand changes because of their support for an athlete like you. Right. I think companies that do well, like Salomon does a really good job with it. Right. They put all these athletes that are fun and that are good on social media and it immediately changes what Salomon is to the average consumer because they're all fans of these people. And I'm sure for you, it's like you have Kesley and DinaFit, right? Like those aren't necessarily household ski names,
right?
But they are big companies, like they're important companies.
Absolutely.
What do you do specifically for those two companies? Because to me, those are niche companies that are big, right? Like they kind of don't fit in any one pocket.
Yeah. The interesting thing about DinaFit is that they're very like uphill, centered.
Yeah.
So one of the things I've been working on and is kind of getting my audience out of the mindset that DinaFit only makes products that go uphill well. Mm-hmm. I don't ski on a traditional binding anymore, and I haven't for several years. I ski on tech bindings on the resort all year round in what would be considered a touring boot, but quite honestly is as stiff as any other alpine boot that I used previously.
What boot do you ski in?
I ski right now in the Hoji boot.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a great boot, man. Yeah. It's all you need. So I'm trying to help to kind of change the perception that you have to have multiple different setups for multiple different things. And of course, yeah, it's always nice, but not everyone can afford to have 3, 4, 5 different setups and pairs of boots and bindings to match every condition out there. Well, I can ski and tour anywhere I want on the same ski, the Kesley BMX 105, and combine that with a DinaFit 12-din SpeedFit speed binding and Hoji boots, and I can pretty much go anywhere. And that's my resort setup, and that's, you know, a lot of times that's my, like,
that's your everyday setup.
Backcountry setup too.
Yeah.
And I think there's always been a perception that those setups don't work well in the resort.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, they work just great. They work very well.
So here's a question for you. Are you locking your bindings or are you leaving them in ski mode?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Yeah.
I don't usually lock out unless it's extremely firm.
Okay.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's because it's a hard balance, right? And that's why a lot of people felt like this new shift thing is important, or other frame bindings are important. Like we were talking to Cynthia Johnson, and she was talking about like how she had this like crazy leg injury because of a pin bind, and it wasn't a DinaFit, but I don't think, had a crazy leg injury because she locked herself out, and it didn't release, and like that's what ended up happening. I think a lot of people's concerns are just skiing that binding in bounds, but you haven't had any issues with it at all, huh?
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, we should talk for a second about what happens when you lock one of those bindings out is you don't come out.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of locking it out.
Yeah.
If you're skiing in a place where even if there's a 1% chance of you coming out of that binding and you just can't possibly come out no matter what, you don't want to come out, yeah, you lock it out.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm skiing in France in Chamonix and I'm in an exposed place, I'm locking the binding out.
It's safer.
Because I can't, in any scenario, whatever happens to me, it's going to be better if my skis are still on my feet.
Yeah.
You know, there are different perspectives, I think, on that. And we could preface this whole thing by saying, like, I weigh 145 pounds. I'm 5'7".
Yeah.
You know, I can ski on a 12-din binding without it being locked out.
Yeah.
And I think Dynafit has done a pretty good job, although they're not manufacturing their 16-din Beast binding anymore. But they have had products out there that have a pretty high release value. So I think... in terms of getting injured when your skis are, when your binding is locked out, maybe it comes down to skier error.
Oh yeah, I definitely think, and she and said
judgment,
it like
in judgment error, you know?
Yeah. So. It's not like she came on here and was like, fuck those things. Like they're the worst. Like that's not what happened. Like,
yeah,
it was,
I mean,
just like,
no,
it basically, like, the idea is that people kind of get pushed away from like that pin binding because people want that setup that does everything right. Mm-hmm. So in theory, the pin binding is not the best, which I'm not saying I agree or disagree. In theory, or at least the way that it's pushed out to most consumers, you want to be in a frame binding or you want to be in, who knows, well, you can use one of these like Daymaker systems or whatever. But I actually haven't had a lot of issues with it either, but I do lock them probably more than I should, but I'm 210 pounds. Like, I'm not a small person to be doing that. So, like, I don't know. It's a strange thing. We'll see what ends up happening with it over time and how... And Dynafit in general, like, has a big opportunity where they could... Beast was, like, a good attempt at making a binding that could really haul and huck and, like, withstand whatever. But I think it was a little too complicated for most... people.
Exactly.
So we'll see what they have a big opportunity to make something better than the Shift, because Shift is nice, but there's a lot of room for improvement.
Always. And so. I think that's, it's interesting to kind of be around the innovation and to see what other products are out there. I think the, you know, I don't want to plug Salomon because I don't represent them, but
no, for sure.
The Shift binding is pretty sweet. And I think that for a lot of people, that's a very viable option. And I think also, for a lot of people who are not 210 pounds, you know, a Dynafit Speed binding of 12 din could be a very viable option as well. And I think when we're looking at kind of the way athletes use the gear in comparison to the way the general public is going to use the gear, there's a big difference. So, you know, your everyday skier isn't going to be necessarily needing the same thing that maybe one of you guys at the free skier test is going to need, a higher level skier.
Right.
So there's things that have to be considered when you're going to, you know, buy a product, and especially if you want to buy something that you feel could be used as a one ski quiver, could be used in this singular capacity on the resort in the backcountry. And it's, I think that it's really cool and nice that those things are being produced now. And I know there are a lot of options out there for people.
You got to try new shit, right? Like, I mean, there's, you got to innovate. Like, otherwise, what are we doing? Because there's always room for improvement on everything. If you had one piece of your gear that you wanted to improve, what would it be and how would you improve it? Have you thought about that?
That's a good question. Let me pause while I take
thought about that. Do your thing. It's hard because you use a lot of stuff. There has to be shit that you're like, I really wish this was this way or this was this way. I don't know. Like, I ski on stuff sometimes and I'm like, this is fine. Like, but it could be better for this purpose or the price could be lower or whatever. Like, is there something, I guess, let me phrase it in a different way, I guess, too. Like, is there something in the industry that you'd like to see change for the better, I guess?
Well, now those are two separate questions.
Right. Whatever one, you can pick the one that's easier for you to answer.
In terms of the gear, personally, I always feel like the boots are what matter the most.
Yeah.
They're what's directly attached to your feet, then attached to the binding, and then the ski. So everything really comes from the boot. I feel like in my experience, I haven't quite found that boot that is like the total compromise between lightness and downhill skiing ability. Mainly because, I don't know, plastics are so strong and stiff now. And then we also have, you know, carbon elements to boots. And I'm talking primarily from like a light and efficient ski mountaineering perspective, like bigger days and something very light that also is durable and handles the rigors of maybe a steep or variable descent.
Yeah.
But I think although plastics and all of that, it's, you know, things are getting stiffer, lighter, but stiffer. I always find that the shortcomings with my gear have to do with liners and the comfort that my feet have in the boot. I think there's so much room for improvement
in ski boots.
Yeah. In the boots. And I know, specifically, Dynafit has done a lot to improve boots. The Hoji boot was a major success. Boots are a lot better
even now than they were like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like they're way better, which is nice. It's good to see them doing that. It's, yeah, there's a lot of boots are probably the easiest answer too, because like everybody hates ski boots. It's like, why would you want to be in a ski boot? Like you're in a plastic vice basically all day.
Right.
So that is the connecting point between you and this sled that's getting you downhill. So it's, yeah, I think that's a cop-out answer. Ski boots is a cop-out answer.
Man, I'm being accused of cop-out. Yeah. I can't believe it.
So what about the other thing? What would you like to see change in the ski industry?
Well, I think we already touched on one. I'd love to see
better
support for athletes in North America.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of athletes who work very hard and do a really great job in their multifaceted roles and still kind of have to struggle to make a living.
Mm.
And perhaps that's something that's been kind of, I don't know, it's been like glorified a little bit. I don't think that makes that okay.
Yeah.
Personally, I think if you go to other countries where skiing has had a richer, longer history, you see that athletes are offered the full support of the brands that they work with. And I think that I think that there is still room to incorporate athletes as a important tool in the overall marketing process and for brands. And I do know, because I know this to be true for myself, that, despite where a lot of us are out there hustling and we're passionate about it, and, you know, the excuse that we'd all be doing this anyways, whether we were paid or not, isn't a viable excuse to me anymore. And I've heard that from a number of different brands over the years. I just find that inexcusable. But we could get beyond that. I think the interesting thing about the ski industry, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, kind of the connotation that skiing is often synonymous with partying, I think is a topic worth exploring, maybe in a podcast of its own. But I would love to see skiing celebrated as skiing and not necessarily celebrated afterwards at a bar.
Or during
10 beers deep.
Yeah.
Because I think that that detracts from the actual act of skiing and the enjoyment behind it. And I don't necessarily think skiing being such an active and lifelong kind of sport and activity that provides for people so much enjoyment. It's hard for me to allow that to be synonymous with partying, which I think has all of the opposite effects of that. I don't think that that particular outlet and its relationship to skiing is one of the stronger areas. Especially considering, I think, for me personally, most interactions that involve alcohol or drinking don't really have any depth to them.
Yeah.
Rather, the act of skiing for me has a lot of depth. I feel something at my core when I'm skiing. That's how much I love it.
Mm.
So I only want to do and pursue things that make me feel that way. And I would like to, I don't know, influence people to think about things that way instead of maybe celebrating their great day of powder skiing. Like with a serious multiple hour apres, you know, it might just be good to have a couple of beers in moderation and go home. People will probably say that I'm out of my mind for this, or
I mean, maybe, but maybe not. Whatever. Like, it's a good point though, dude. Like, it really is, because and I'm the one fucking talking about this while we're at, I'm at Free Skier Fest. Like, where all it is like partying after and during everything. But I mean, it's, which is great, but it's also like, you're right, it doesn't need to be synonymous with skiing. It's cool that it's an option for people, and mm-hmm. I always think that, like, if that's your thing and you want to do that, great. But the way that skiing in general, it, like, they are so related that they almost come as a package deal.
And I wonder if that facilitates the beginning of unhealthy lifestyle choices for some people, and that kind of worries me.
How can't it?
Right.
You know, like, it's got to be at least some factor in it, right? And I don't want to, like, I don't want this to be like a shit on drinking session, but
sure,
it should be your choice. You know, it shouldn't just be part of the system, I think.
Exactly. And so. I'm not really wondering about it. I know it because I've been involved in the industry for a long time, and I tend to skip specific events because I know that many people who go to those events have a interest in maybe staying out a little later than I do.
Yeah.
And as an athlete who feels strongly about the interior state of my body, I know that, you know, overdoing it when it comes to alcohol is not, it's not the answer for me, and for, you know, for me to be somewhat disciplined person, it would go against my ability to perform my job as an athlete to the best of my ability, and to train like an athlete.
It's true. It's definitely true. So do you not drink at all?
No, I definitely drink.
Okay.
But I drink in moderation. I'm a one beer.
Yeah. You do what you want.
Like two beer kind of person.
Yeah. Yeah,
I wasn't always like that. That's
really,
I grew out of.
That's a good thing, man. Not a lot of people actually grow out of it.
Yeah,
like most people just, it's, at least it seems like, just carry it on forever and ever.
Right, and that's kind of the thing that I would love to see change in the ski industry. I don't want people to feel that a day of skiing has to involve also a long evening at the bar.
Yeah,
I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting together with your buddies and like celebrating an awesome day on the mountain. But when you take it too far and it inhibits your ability to kind of reach your potential as a person or to be a healthy, functioning individual, you know, I don't want skiing to be the thing that drives people in that direction. I want skiing to be the thing that lifts people up and facilitates a healthy, active lifestyle for people, not the exact opposite of that.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So before we get too far into this, we have a couple Instagram questions for you. Let me just pull them up. You'd think I'd have this already, but to date, I don't think I've ever had them ready when I needed them.
The beauty of post-processing.
Yeah, you just figure it out afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Chris Abrams wants to know, how can I become a pro skier? That was his whole question. It's just a bunch of dots. wants to know, how can I become a pro skier?
I get that question a lot. I don't think there's any one right answer to that. I think if you want to be a professional skier or a professional at anything, it starts with recognizing that one thing that you're passionate about and putting your focused intent into that outlet. And from there, things tend to grow naturally if you have enough drive and willingness. I think ski industry is one of the tougher ones because, as we discussed, there's not a ton of financial backing for athletes. Mm-hmm. So I believe that it, for me, it is a great opportunity to practice resilience. Kind of remembering the reasons why I ski in the first place. And, if some of those facets, encompass who you are, you could be a professional skier. If you're passionate about skiing, if you're able to use that as, an outlet to reach people, to grow your own personal brand, which is important now, you could become a professional.
Hmm. How much of being a pro, and I don't mean this as like an insult if you don't think any of it is, how much of being a pro do you think is luck? Like, how much do you think luck plays a part in becoming a professional athlete? Because you have to get breaks, right? Like, you have to find companies that actually respond to you. You have to, like, get this guy to do this for you. Like, there's a lot of that kind of shit in this industry in particular.
It's very interesting because I think that timing is the most important part about building brand relationships.
Okay.
If you engage with the brand and you're looking for a partnership and it's not the right time, you're going to get no.
Yeah.
But the more you put yourself out there, I think the more opportunity you have to receive the yeses that you need or the breaks. So for me, I just constantly put myself out there, and it's an uncomfortable position because you get told no, like 95% of the time. That's how this is. But those 5%, it like makes, it provides the impetus for the next and the next and the next. And there's all sorts of ways to build relationships and partnerships that are mutually beneficial for, for the athlete and also for the brand. And I think it takes exploring those possibilities. It takes being willing to get paid a lot less than probably what you're actually worth in order to just start a relationship that could be very beneficial for you. Over the course of several years, and being mindful that, every little thing is part of an overall process and a journey, and it's not one contract is never going to make or break your, being able to be a professional.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. It's got to be a weird balance too between like feeling annoying to a company and constantly putting yourself out there.
Yeah. Timing is everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's an important thing to kind of point out to people. It's not like when you say keep putting yourself out there, it's not like you write the same email to the same company and just wonder why they don't respond and just keep over it. Like, because I know people that do that because, like, I run a ski shop. Like, that's what my actual job is.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that email all the time. It's like, hey, can you guys sponsor me? Like, please? And then the next email is like, hello? Like, and the next email is like, are you getting these? Like, so it's hard to find that balance, I think, for people. But
I'm not, I don't work as a marketing director or manager for a major brand, but I would assume, and this is probably a modest estimate, but someone in that position most likely receives hundreds of emails per day.
Yeah.
So patience is also very important.
Yeah.
Wait, they will get back to you.
Yeah. All right, let's see what else we got for questions. Till I Die Official wants to know, some people think the earth is round. What's your response to those idiots?
Some people think the world is round. What's my response to those
idiots? Yeah. I'm assuming it's a joke. I'm hoping it's a joke and that this brand does not think that the world is actually flat. But what do you think about the whole flat earth thing? Is that a thing in Aspen? Like, have you heard people seriously think that yet?
I honestly, everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
No, don't say that. Like,
that's my second cop-out answer for the day. I guess sometimes people talk about that stuff. I tend to not engage with things that don't resonate with me, and that would be one of them.
Yeah, or things that are just not intelligent at all.
Correct.
All right, I'm going to get you out of here. So before we go, it's probably a good time to plug your sponsors, talk about that stuff, and tell people where they can find you, either on social media or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, you guys can tune in. TJ_skis on Instagram. That's my primary platform. I'm on Facebook, but I
nobody uses
don't Facebook. Really post there very often.
Yeah.
Yes, I am very generously supported by Dinafit, Kesley, Jewel Bow, North America, Aspen Snowmass, Lakey.
Nice.
Yes.
How's Jewel Bow been for you?
Great.
Yeah.
I love their goggles.
Yeah, they make good stuff. They're making a helmet now too, right?
Yeah.
Is that a thing for next year?
I don't know if that's out in the market here yet, but it's totally, it's a thing in Europe.
I think it's a thing neck. I don't know. I can't remember. There's too much product this time of year.
Like, yeah.
My brain shuts off from the amount of product that is coming out. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing this, dude.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right.
And that's our episode with TJ David. You can find him on Instagram as he just plugged, but if you need it again, it is TJ_skis. And Instagram is the platform right now, man. So hit that up. And obviously follow us on social media if you do not. Thank you to Sawatch Hemp for sponsoring this episode. Be sure to check them out. I'm a little Canadian this week. Be sure to check them out and use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS to save 15% off on your purchase. And we will talk to you guys next episode. I have no idea who's going to be on next episode, but I guess you guys will just have to wait and see. Thanks, guys.